Welcome to the Humans and AI Podcast, powered by AI Frontier Network. I'm your host, Flor La Orga. Each episode, we dive into the human story shaping artificial intelligence through the journeys of entrepreneurs, builders, and leaders. We explore the insights, challenges, and visions for the future of AI and humanity. Let's uncover the human side of AI together. Great. So, thanks, Charlie. I appreciate your time. Thanks for participating to the Humans and AI podcast. I'm very excited to talk about what you are building. I found it very interesting and as well relevant to talk about. So yeah, let's dive into it. Okay, I've been checking a little bit, obviously, the story of your career, a little bit of the background. So I've seen that you've made some big career changes. From studying history and working in politics to running car businesses to health and wellness, and now you are doing AI. So what motivated you to shift paths at each stage?
Well, my career, I'm a lot older than probably most of the people that you deal with. I've been an entrepreneur for 35 years. I started my first job out of college at the University of Michigan. I went to Washington, D.C. I was a Senate staffer and congressional staffer for several years, and I realized how messed up the federal government was, and I wanted nothing to do with it. Became a radical libertarian, and I said the only thing for me is to go into business for myself. In my early, so when I was 25, I was able to get a loan, and I started a quick oil change franchise. This is in the 80s, in the late 80s. And I was able to build 17 stores in a relatively short period of time. I had 300 employees by the time I was age 30. And I sold the company to Jiffy Lube, which was the biggest player in the space. And that's when I said I wanted to really get into the internet. It was in the late 90s. And I was so excited about the internet. I was in Michigan, I moved to California, and I started an internet company called RealAge. That I had met this professor at the University of Chicago who was working on health risk assessments, and we started this company called RealAge. His name was Dr. Michael Roizen. It was a health risk assessment about how you can be younger. And we delivered a metric, this thing called real age or your biological age. And then we recruited Dr. Mehmet Oz to be our spokesperson. You all know Dr. Oz. This was essentially the first permission company because we would gather hundreds of data points and then we would ask permission if they would like to receive information about how to be healthier or make their real age younger. And for the opt-in audience, which was about 60%, the response rate wasn't a little bit better, 2 or 3x better, but it was 10 to 15x better when somebody actually consciously gave permission. Very successful company. We sold it to Hearst very successfully. That's when Dr. Oz took over the Oprah show after we sold the company. So now, 10, 12 years later after that, I started version two, which was permission, which is all based on the idea that data has tremendous value and that individuals should own it and be able to grant or deny permission to use it. And here we are with AI, which is the perfect use case because AI needs permission to use data.
Yeah, I also saw that in your profile on your company too, AI needs permission. I actually found it very, very interesting. So basically, I think the permission name is also a very good name for what you guys are doing. So it makes total sense how I appreciate the way that you put it how do you describe the whole process and do you get to the point of building permission? You said the quality of your AI depends on the quality of your data. Can you dig more into it?
Sure. All AI models or agents, data is the natural resource that makes it work. So the old adage in computing that goes back decades, everybody knows garbage in, garbage out. And that's what it's all about. The quality of the data will determine the quality of the AI. It's that simple. So AI products, models, agents, etc., will compete in quality based on the quality of the data. Think about a chef, a famous Michelin-starred chef. He might have the best ingredients, the best techniques and skills, but without the best ingredients and the highest quality ingredients into the food, it doesn't matter how good his skills are if the ingredients aren't good. It's the same principle. It's the exact same thing.
Great. One part that I really like from Permission as well is that you guys collected the data of the of your clients, but they even can't make money from it, earn from their own data. And actually, as you said, it's a kind of it's trustworthy data because it's the data that they put themselves about them, about what they about them. This is what I understood.
And that's correct. We are essentially the agent for the individual to help them make money from their data, because their data is being used by Meta and X and Google and all the major platforms, but they don't get any compensation for it. So that's the whole principle of Permission, is that we help individuals own their data and earn compensation for it. And it's only proper that the individual is compensated, because there's dozens and dozens of businesses and entities that are making money off of your data. And it's time that the individual gets their cut.
Thanks, Charlie. That's very thoughtful, and I agree with that. When actually checking your other Permission company and all you guys are doing, I was like, wow, that's sounds very interesting. So actually talking a little bit about the agent, the Permission agent seems to be something very innovative, because actually I never heard that before in the data privacy space. Could you share with me what is the experience if, for example, myself, I use a Permission on my computer doing online shopping or watching a video or whatever. So how would be the experience for me with Permission?
Well, we try and make it as easy and delightful as possible. It's going to get better and better every 2 weeks. We're going to do new releases, and it's a very early version. So you go to Permission and you set up an account. You just simply register, and that enables you to get a digital wallet and a browser extension. And that agent now, you've given permission to follow you around the web. And we get to know what you like and dislike. And then you're going to get opportunities. You'll get a little notification. Oh, because you play golf or tennis, Nike would like to compensate you for your data. And you can either accept the reward and grant permission or say no. And it's up to you. And that's how it works. And so as we bring up, as the world of AI grows and every business wants to have data, specific data, you're going to get more and more opportunities to earn from it. So you don't have to do anything. It's all passive. You just get notified whether or not you want to accept an offer from a particular business.
Okay. You said that customers are the business, and the job is to create value for them first, right? So how do you apply it when building tech in emerging spaces like blockchain and AI? How do you apply that?
Again, every business's job is to take care of their customers. And we have two sets of customers. It's a two-sided market. There's the individuals, me and you, that accept compensation for their data. And then there's the purchasers of the data, the Nikes, the Procter & Gambles, the JP Morgan's, Allstate Insurance. And we want to make sure our logo is a handshake. And we're bringing these parties together, parties that want to purchase data and individuals that own their data and want to receive compensation for it. So we have to take care of both. Every business's job is to make happy customers and set and provide value for their customers. And we're very focused on that.
Okay, there's something that I also checked on your LinkedIn in one of the posts that you said. AI agents are everywhere. Everyone's racing to build one, but no one is asking the most important question. What data is AI really trained on, and where is it getting data from? So I found it very, I would like to discuss about this.
Yeah, I was just at this the very large AI show, trade show, AI 4 in Las Vegas at the MGM. We had a big booth and I was a speaker. And there were a lot of companies out there that scrape data for AI, which is just basically go to web publishers, scrape the data. They can buy it in all kinds of different ways. You can buy cookie data, cookie consent data, and the individual doesn't get a piece of it. And by the way, half of the internet traffic are bots, are just little software programs created to click or all around. I don't know if you're aware that organized crime, the mafia around the world, is click fraud is their number two business. Narcotics is number one, but click fraud is a $100 billion organized crime business. And so do you really want to build your AI on bots and scrape data? And by the way, it's probably against GDPR and CCPA, the regulations around data anyway. So for an enterprise that's getting involved in AI, they should be concerned about quality of the data, make sure it's permission-based with an audit trail. That permission has actually been granted. So you can build your AI on real human verified data. Or do you want to build it on essentially garbage, which is bots and scrape data? So there's a real fundamental decision here that business needs to decide on what they're building their AI on.
Yeah, that's interesting. I haven't heard about those two big companies, to be honest. I knew about the bugs and bots and these kind of things, but I didn't really know about that's, well, thank you for sharing that, because I believe that many people as well don't know it yet. So that's, I think, is very good to share it. Also, you said something that most brands are feeding AI with stolen data because they don't ask you for permission, right? Hey, can I use that? Actually, I have an example like that because the other day I was looking on Google for my name, right? My full name is Flor Laurga. And then they were saying that I studied software engineering. I was like, in some kind of AI thing, I'm like, I haven't studied that. You know, it's stolen data, but it's also wrong data. So which regulations do you think that either the government or companies should apply for avoiding this kind of not just fake data, but stop stealing data as well? What is the important regulations that you think that we should apply?
Well, I started permission right around the same time that GDPR, the Global Data Protection Regulations, and GDPR is very strong in Europe. And I thought the US would follow suit quickly. A lot of countries in Asia have followed suit, but the U.S. has been slow. And the U.S. has been slow primarily because Google and Meta and Amazon are very powerful here. And they've fought all kinds of data regulations. But California and 12 other states have their own regulations. And they fought them hard in California as well. But they're going to happen. And the bottom line is that business need to ask permission in order to use data. And individuals need the right to grant permission, and they need the right to delete their data. And so it's happening. Most business enterprise operate in Europe and have to be compliant with GDPR. So I think data regulations are going to have a huge impact on AI.
So talking a little bit more on these lines, do you believe that platforms can be forced only to collect data that can't be used to identify users.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that question?
Do you think that platforms, like, for example, permission, do you think platforms can be forced, but not yours because you kind of, you're doing something related with privacy, but can be forced to collect their data but can't be used to identify users? Like, okay, you have your data, but they don't know who is the person behind, you know what I mean? To identify the user, yeah.
Look, most of the data that runs the internet is what's called first-party data, which is when you see cookie consents, you know, do you consent to this cookie? That everywhere, right? And people, some people understand it, but most people don't. But when you accept a cookie, that piece of software tracks you everywhere on the internet. And then the people, that data is then sold. So if you're on a website and you say accept cookies on TikTok, they then go and sell the data to buyers. And I think that whole game is a disaster, and it is unfair to the users because they don't get any compensation. And it also leads to all kinds of bad outcomes. I think it's all going to change. And I think it's all going to be explicit. The data can only be used with explicit permission. And we certainly are an advocate for that.
Great. We know that data, it's necessary. It's basically the lifeblood of AI. But also with all that data, as we say, that people right now, there are a lot of people, there's a bit of people who believe in AI 100% and just the AI the future, and other people who are just like afraid of AI because there's the trust, there's the ethics part. So what do you think about AI trust in when people don't really trust that? Because even though they say they don't trust it, but they actually use AI, like, for example, ChatGPT to ask things. But then they say, oh, no, that they said wrong thing. So what is your perspective about that?
Again, we're in the early stages of AI. I'm a huge believer in its potential to enhance humanity. I'm not afraid of it. I think it's a great thing. But it does come down to the data. Right now, ChatGPT and Gemini and Grok, it's all based on scraped data. It will get really good when the data is based on permission and it's based on real humans giving permission. And I think that's essential for trust in AI. And you're going to see trust go up with the levels of quality and permission. And the more permission and quality get baked into it, AI has enormous potential to enhance our lives in so many ways. So I'm actually very excited about the future of AI.
So talking a little bit about humans and AI, in your perspective, what is the best balance for both? Because we know AI helps a lot of humans to be more efficient and productive, but then this is that human touch. So how do you balance that?
Well, it's interesting. AI is going to be very good at generative stuff, creating videos, writing papers, analyzing documents, doing all kinds of tasks. But I don't think AI will ever get to a point, ever. There's something very human, and it's called common sense. And that's a human characteristic. And I don't think even hundreds of years into the future that there's a human quality called common sense that I don't think AI will ever really have. So there's still going to be a role for humans.
Yeah, I also believe so. But it's true that every time when I talk about AI things or with people, right, I see the fear of them. Oh, they're going to steal my job, or they're going to replace everything. And it's this kind of fear, I think, that it's about, okay, I'm not going to be needed anymore in this world. What am I going to do? But I think it's the most important thing is learn how to use AI. That, I guess, this is the thing. But yes, who's doing work in AI that you admire? Either it can be a well-known person or can be just maybe a friend of yours.
It really is about the organization. because it's a collaborative thing. Look, there are five or six major platforms, and I'm very much a fan of. It's obviously it's Google, Meta, Anthropic, X, Amazon. These are the major players. And we're a partner of Google. I'm very impressed with how Google and Gemini have been rolling out and DeepMind. I'm not a fan of some of the other players. So I'm not a fan of Open. I don't want to get it. It's like I said, we're a Google partner. I'm very pleased with how Google is going about AI and doing it the right way. So that's a company I do admire.
Great. So looking ahead 5 years, let's say, because I think 10 is too much. We don't know what we're maybe too ahead. So how do you imagine the role of user-owned data evolving, especially with AI systems becoming more autonomous?
I think permission is going to be baked into the cake. We want to have hundreds of millions of people with the permission agent. Uh-huh. And we're not going to be the only players. But I think permission is going to be baked into usage on the internet. Jack Dorsey. Oh, I should have mentioned Jack Dorsey in the previous discussion. I'm a big admirer of his. And he talks about Web 5. Web 5 is the place where data is decentralized and really in control by the individual, and that individuals be compensated. We're really a Web 5 company, bringing in crypto rewards and AI to really see this vision of Web 5, which is where data is totally decentralized, controlled by individuals, not controlled by the big platforms. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, definitely. Do you have any book that really influenced the way that you view data ethics, a book?
There's a lot of books about ethics. I'm a huge believer in what's called objectivist ethics. Ayn Rand, I don't know if you're familiar with the author Ayn Rand. She laid out an ethical system about individual rights and property rights. I believe that data is property, and that property rights are a function of the individual, and that individuals should have control over their property. And when that happens, you have a free society, you have a free enterprise system, and a real free society. And it starts with property rights, and data is property. And so in terms of ethics, I go all the way back to the writings of Ayn Rand. To me, she is the most important philosopher about property rights.
Thanks for sharing that, Charlene. So I will take a look because actually I didn't know those that you said. So I think it's very interesting. Thank you.
Ayn Rand is a very famous author from the 50s, 40s and the 50s. She wrote a bunch of famous novels, and yeah, I highly recommend your audience read them. If they have Atlas Shrugged, The Fountainhead, and many of her essays.
Okay, I've got one last question for you. And it's, as someone who has had success in in many unrelated fields, how would you advise someone that is on how to know whether a total change in career is right for them or how to start again as someone who isn't in their 20s anymore? Like they've been maybe in a career path that they don't like and they want to change, but because this happened a lot in the 20s to 30s.
My advice to any person thinking about career, follow your values. Stay focused on your values. What do you care about? What's important to you? And don't just follow the money. Follow what's important. And that's how you achieve success. Because at the end of the day, success is not about how much money is in your bank account. It's about how you feel you contributed to the world and how you are true to your values. So think about what's important to you and pursue that.
Thanks a lot for that advice. However, I feel like when you are 20s, it's like many kind of you want to make money, right? Because you kind of like, if this is the balance between, okay, follow your dreams, follow your values, but at the same time, you want to make money. And if you don't have money, how you want to follow? So what would you say about that, for example?
Again, stay true to your values. You'll have plenty of opportunities to make money, but just focus on what's important to you. Focus, don't ever compromise, and you'll be very successful.
Thanks very much, Charlie. I appreciate this conversation very much. I have so much fun. I have learned so much too. So thank you very much for making time for this.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you. And stay in touch.
Thanks for listening to the Humans and AI podcast. We are here to spotlight the people making AI more human, one story at a time. See you in the next episode.